before he became the minister.
What do you think is most important for the globe right now, the response to what's happening?
Well, there's a lot of things that are important. People need to show their solidarity with indigenous peoples. People should come out in the global mobilizations that are happening around the Amazon, also the climate strikes that are happening in September. And people need to reevaluate their own.
But we'll do part two, put it online. Andrew Miller of Amazon Watch. Very happy birthday to Julie Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 4:59 and 49 seconds. Coming up next is your KBOO Evening News.
Join KBOO every Friday at 5:30 p.m. for Counterspin, a show that provides a critical examination of major media stories and exposes what the mainstream media missed. Counterspin exposes and highlights censored stories, sexism, racism, and homophobia in the news, the power of corporate influence, gaffes and goofs by leading TV pundits, and more. That's every Friday at 5:30 p.m. here on your community radio station. KBOO Portland.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Grendel's Coffee House, located at East Burnside Street and 8th Avenue in Portland, offering organic coffee, daily soup specials, sandwiches, and more for breakfast and lunch. Open daily until 5 p.m. More information is available on the Grendel's Facebook page and by phone at 503-595-595. 9550.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, six Patriot Prayer members have been indicted for rioting on May Day.
A new Los Angeles law could punish homeless people based on where they sleep.
And in international news, the U.S. and China trade war escalates further.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, August 23rd, 2019. I'm Jezaniah Hawthorne.
And I'm Linda Olson Osterlund. Disappointed fans of the food cart block formerly located at Southwest 10th and Alder may have cause for hope. A fundraiser took place last night with two dozen food cart owners from 10th and Alder gathered at the Red East event space. For $20, guests could sample food from each cart while supporting the cart's relocation to West Burnside. Sumo Sushi owner Danny Chan said he missed his food cart neighbors. Quote, "I miss them a lot. It was part of our life together." End quote. The new proposed spot is near Ankeny Square, a six-mile park where people can bike and walk. According to Keith Jones, director of Friends of the Green Loop, the city would allow the carts there if they paid for plumbing and electric installation. The cost to do so would run around $180,000, and so far they've raised $40,000 through different fundraisers.
Six men were indicted for rioting at Cider Riot on May Day. Joey Gibson, the leader of Patriot Prayer in Vancouver, was among the men indicted. The other five were Christopher Pont, Ian Kramer, Mackenzie Lewis, Matthew Cooper, and Russell Schultz. According to the $1 million lawsuit filed after the fight, the five men convicted were connected to Patriot Prayer and a far-right group. Gibson insisted he was unjustly targeted by the district attorney to halt the far-right protesters that were scheduled last weekend downtown. Gibson told reporters at the Multnomah County Detention Center that, quote, "Instead of arresting the criminals, they decided to charge me with rioting. They're trying to silence us." These charges come as a new footage has surfaced before the riot, which appears to show some of the members planning for violence ahead of time.
Seven public universities in Oregon have declared an impasse in contract negotiations with the Service Employees International Union. Management had until today to submit a final offer to the workers, and without an offer, workers are inching closer to a strike. The SEIU 503 represents the university staff, including office workers and custodial staff. The members say the universities aren't offering a fair contract. Concerns range from salary increases to layoffs and workplace bullying. The union is asking for a 3.5% cost of living adjustment, and the university is proposing 1% cost of living increase. The bargaining team says they will not agree to salary increases until management raises compensation for all workers.
Next, we have Climate Connections, a daily podcast devoted to discussing climate change and its impact on listeners' lives.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Kirsten Kurtz is a soil scientist. She's also a visual artist, and she's found an unusual way to combine these two parts of her life.
I was taking a class in acrylic painting, and I was really not liking the colors of acrylic paint. And at the same time, I was working in the Cornell Soil Health Lab and becoming really enamored with the variety of colors of these natural soils.
So Kurt started making paint out of soil and using it to create vibrant images. A dancer's dress is a rich red, and a landscape glows gold. Now she invites others to paint with her at events.
Most of us as children played in the mud, and I think that it brings back this kind of in touch with the earth feeling that a lot of us have, even if we aren't that close to farming or close to soil.
She hopes the experience inspires people to care about soil health. She says unsustainable agriculture and development have degraded much of the world's soil. Reversing that trend is important for growing food. It also helps the climate, because healthy soil stores a lot of carbon.
I just want people to understand that soil is a natural resource as important as clean air and clean water.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
Now let's turn to Labor History in Two with host Rick Scott.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1900. That was the day that folk singer Malvina Reynolds was born to a Jewish family in San Francisco. Her parents were socialists and operated a tailor shop. Malvina learned the price of speaking out for what you believe in at a young age. Her parents opposed U.S. entry into World War I. Because of this, Malvina's high school would not issue her a diploma. She was able to still go to college at Berkeley, where she eventually earned her Ph.D. She married carpenter and labor organizer William Bud Reynolds. She became a prolific folk singer, playing around the Los Angeles area. During the 1960s, she wrote about songs supporting civil rights and labor rights. Her song, Free Enterprise, offers the lyrics, "The air you breathe is poison. The food you eat is worse. The dollars in your paycheck are pennies in your purse. There's nothing free about it. You pay at every turn. Except the guys in Wall Street who have the stuff to burn. They had to make new brain machines to count their profits rise. But since there's always room for more, they can still make their profits soar. A little war does wonders for free enterprise." Perhaps her most well-known song is Little Boxes. The song was inspired by driving by hillside houses in Daly City, California. It talks about the conformity of middle-class suburbia.
They are put in boxes and they come out all the same. And the boys go into business and marry and raise a family in boxes. Made of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same.
Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
And a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same.
The billionaire conservative activist and philanthropist David Koch has died at 79 years old. Koch served as the vice president of Koch Industries. Along with his brother Charles Koch, they were tied as the 11th richest person in the world this year as listed by Forbes. At the time of David Koch's death, he was worth $42.4 billion. The two brothers helped create a conservative network of donors for organizations that worked to mobilize voters and sway elected officials. The money was also used to fight Obama healthcare initiatives, given to groups that deny climate change and to other groups that oppose gun laws. In 1980, he ran as the Libertarian Party's vice presidential candidate. He was diagnosed with cancer 27 years ago and donated hundreds of millions to medical research.
A new law in Los Angeles could stop homeless people from sleeping near schools, parks, or crowded public areas. Los Angeles Councilman Mitch O'Farrell proposed a rule that punishes people based on where they sleep. According to the Los Angeles Times, the rule will have to go through lawyers before it heads to a vote. It is unclear how this proposal will fare legally compared to last September's Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals decision that overturned camping bans, saying that the city in their jurisdiction couldn't ticket people for sleeping on the street if they didn't have anywhere else to go. Carol Sobel, an attorney who represents the homeless population, called the new rules completely unworkable.
KABU Evening News. Stay tuned after the newscast for Counterspin at 5:30. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, it's The Struggle. Tonight's weather, warm and slightly cloudy tonight, will be in the low 70s. Tomorrow's weather will be warm with some clouds. Temperatures will stay in the 70s, with the high being 79 degrees. Today in history, the World Wide Web, known as WWW, was opened to the public in 1989 by English scientist Tim Berners-Lee. It has been a crucial part of the information age and its primary tool billions of people use to interact on the internet. The quote of the day is from former CEO of Google, Eric Schmidt. Quote, "The internet is the first thing that humanity has built that humanity doesn't understand. The largest experiment in anarchy that we have ever had."
In Kansas City, Missouri, Susie Torrey woke up on Tuesday with an odd sensation. Her left ear felt like water was swishing around, and she assumed it was from an allergy shot she had just received. Excuse me. She discovered that, it must be allergy medicine I need. She discovered she was wrong when doctors extracted a venomous brown recluse spider. When a medical assistant saw Torrey's ear, she ran out to get her colleagues. Luckily, the spider hadn't bit Torrey's. But bites from brown recluse spiders can cause muscle pain, nausea, difficulty breathing, and even death. They aren't usually aggressive, but they will bite when trapped. Spiders crawling into people's ears also isn't unheard of. It's rare, but it happened to a 9-year-old boy in Oregon in 2009.
Today it was announced that U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg has completed radiation treatment for pancreatic cancer. This was Ginsburg's fourth time with cancer since 1999, according to CNN. The court stated Ginsburg tolerated treatment well. Ginsburg's treatment began on August 5th at a cancer center in New York City. During her recent weeks of treatment in New York, she kept a busy schedule, meeting comedians and attending Broadway shows. When the subject of her health came up last month, she spoke up about the remarks made in 2009. Quote, "There was a senator, I think it was after the pancreatic cancer, who announced with great glee that I was going to be dead within 6 months. That senator, whose name I've forgotten, is now himself dead, and I am very much alive." Ginsburg is the oldest Supreme Court justice and the second woman ever appointed to the Supreme Court. She doesn't have any plans to retire, but she evaluates her ability to continue on the court annually.
On Tuesday in Atlanta, Georgia, 4 college students were wounded when a gunman opened fire into a crowd outside a library near Clark Atlanta University. All 4 injured were women, and they are in stable condition after the gunfire. None of the injuries were life-threatening. At the location of the shooting, a block party was celebrating the end of orientation for new students. An argument broke out and someone opened fire, investigators said. Classes started the next day for Spelman College, Morehouse College, and Clark Atlanta. Police and security guards patrolled campus's entrances. Activity seemed normal at the 3 schools, and students reported to classes. Amir Smith, a Morehouse senior, said the college campuses should have more security. Quote, "We are supposed to be in school learning and getting better, and we can't really do that with that shooting and the violence. We don't really feel safe," end quote. The Clark Atlanta University's Office of Religious Life said, quote, "Evil will not have its way on our campus," end quote. That was spread on social media as they announced details for a prayer vigil.
And now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Nebraska Supreme Court Friday upheld the path of the Keystone XL pipeline to cross Nebraska. The Omaha World Herald reports the alternative route picked by state regulators was challenged in 2017 by tribes, environmental groups, and landowners. The ruling comes as energy development was a topic this week at the Frank LaMere Native American Presidential Forum in Iowa. Some candidates pledged to oppose Keystone XL, while others said they'll consult with tribes. Meanwhile, a federal judge in Montana will hear arguments on September 12th on the merits of a lawsuit brought by tribes against President Trump. The Rosebud Sioux Tribe and Fort Belknap Indian community hold the president violated treaties, issuing a permit for the Keystone XL project. TC Energy has asked Judge Brian Morris for dismissal. Victoria Wicks has more.
Wes Furlong is an attorney with the Native American Rights Fund. He says this case is about enforcing the Fort Laramie Treaties of 1851 and 1868, which were designed to stop tribal resistance to settlers traveling the Oregon Trail and building the Transcontinental Railroad. In exchange, the United States agreed that immigrants would stop polluting the water, depleting game, and destroying the terrain. Furlong says construction of the Keystone XL pipeline threatens Indian country in the same way.
The potential of leaks and ruptures of the pipeline will have impacts on their water, on their land, on their other treaty reserved resources for hunting and fishing, on their ability to access game and fish.
TC Energy replied in briefs that the presidential permit allows passage into the United States for only 1.2 miles at the U.S.-Canada border, and so the president's action has no effect on Indian country. TC Energy has wanted to start construction while the lawsuit plays out. Wes Furlong says tribes oppose that proposition. In North Dakota, the Dakota Access Pipeline was under construction while opponents had active lawsuits to stop it, and it was all but completed while waiting for its final federal permit to cross under the Missouri River.
That was very important for the tribes to get out ahead and bring this challenge and bring this fight before construction happens, so that sort of situation doesn't happen again.
In another lawsuit on October 9th, Judge Morris will consider imposing an injunction to halt construction until lawsuits are resolved.
That was Victoria Wicks. Gila River Indian Community Governor Stephen Rowe Lewis asked Democratic presidential hopeful Julian Castro if he'll uphold the Indian Child Welfare Act if elected to the top office. The tribal leader posed the question to Castro this week at the Native Forum in Sioux City and says it's important for all candidates to know about the law.
Native children were taken away from their families and adopted outside of Native communities at such a disproportionate rate to any other racial and ethnic group. That's why the Indian Child Welfare Act was passed by Congress. We have to find out exactly what are the policy implications of these presidential candidates in regards to their platforms. You know, do they ultimately support ICWA, and do they ultimately also support like-minded nominees to the federal court and ultimately to the U.S. Supreme Court that would protect Native landmark laws?
Castro says he wants to strengthen ICWA.
I would make sure that folks know that I support the Indian Child Welfare Act as president, and go out there and campaign on how important it is to preserve it and why it was necessary in the first place. And as you say, even today, these stereotypes, these caricatures, the disregard for Native peoples is still too prevalent in many quarters.
Governor Rowe Lewis says the law, which is intended to keep Native children with Native families, is under attack by the adoption industry. An appeals court recently upheld ICWA after a federal judge in Texas ruled it was unconstitutional. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
France and Ireland said they won't confirm a major trade deal with South American nations until Brazil does more to fight the fires in the Amazon. The trade deal is described as the European Union's biggest deal to date. French leader Emmanuel Macron said President Jair Bolsonaro had lied to him about his view on climate change. Today, there are a record number of fires in the Amazon rainforest, the main oxygen source for the world. Some environmental groups say the wildfires are linked to Bolsonaro's policies, which he denies. Other European leaders have expressed dismay over the fires. UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson called the fires, quote, an international crisis, end quote. Today, Bolsonaro said he was considering options for fighting the fires, including using the military. He accused Macron of using this situation for political gain. Data from the National Institute of Space Research shows an 85% increase of fires in the Amazon this year. Around the world, hundreds are protesting outside the Brazilian embassies, demanding action to protect the rainforest.
As trade tensions continue to escalate between the United States and China, President Trump said today he would raise tariffs on $550 billion in Chinese goods in response to Beijing's new barriers. Trump would raise U.S. tariffs on Chinese goods from 25 to 30% on $250 billion in goods, and would place new tariffs on the remaining $300 billion in goods. The announcement came after China announced it would impose its own retaliatory tariffs on U.S. products. Markets plunged more than 600 points by midday once the trade war escalated. Trump also publicly discouraged companies from buying or using Chinese goods in a tweet. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce said in a statement it wants to see continued constructive engagement with China. The new tariffs will take effect October 1st.
A human chain was formed by pro-democracy protesters across both sides of Hong Kong's harbor on Friday night. About 128,000 demonstrators stretched across parks, overpasses, and waterfronts while joining hands and singing songs. Demonstrators even went to the Lion Rock, Hong Kong's famous peak, with mobile phones shining lights across the city. The event was inspired by the Baltic Way, which took place 30 years ago on August 23, 1989. At that time, 2 million people held hands across Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia to push against the Soviet Union and call for independence. 2 years later, they gained their independence from the USSR. Since early June, Hong Kong has many protests that have been turned chaotic and violent. However, last night's human chain protest was peaceful, and an estimated 1.7 million people came out to be part of it. Organizers called for people to gather along routes snaking nearly 30 miles throughout Hong Kong Island, hoping to raise international awareness of the pro-democracy and anti-extradition law fight.
Julian Marley, son of Bob Marley, is playing the Ashland Armory as a part of his new West Coast tour tomorrow at 7 p.m. KBOO's Althea Billings caught up with Marley about his new album, the tour, and his advocacy for cannabis and cancer research.
So, I understand you are currently on your West Coast tour for your new album. Can you tell me about that? What can fans expect to see?
Well, total electricity, total good vibrations, and as I say, lightning and thunder, electricity, musically, electrifying.
So, what's different about this new album?
Well, it's called As I Am, and what's different is that it's just As I Am, you know, as I feel, every song represents itself, it's different, you know. Each song has a different feel. For me, it's called As I Am, and it's just very raw, just as it is. You know, as we say, As I Am means that, who am I? I'm a humanitarian, you know what I mean? We're a revolutionary in the music. We are conscious, you know? So that's what As I Am represents, you know, consciousness and who I am, you know. When you listen to the songs, you'll know more about, you know, the artist and his thought.
So, can you tell me a little bit about your approach to reggae? What role do you think that it plays in the music scene today?
It plays the same thing that that's ever been doing from creation, same thing. It's the freedom music, it's a music of liberty, it's a music of togetherness. And every day when we look in the world, we see that reggae music is still very, 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 even more relevant now than ever before. So that is what I get to understand now, that reggae music is even more needed than ever before. The world is in a state, and reggae music is the only music that is geared specifically to free the people.
So let's talk a little bit about your humanitarian efforts. So you've been an advocate for a research organization called Canna Kids. Can you tell me a little bit about what they do and how you became involved with them?
Well, I'm a supporter of anything for the children. I became connected to Canna Kids because of my own personal reason. I recently had a daughter that passed away by cancer. That has been a very, it's been very hard just to look in this big whole world and see that there is no treatment. No one's looking for any treatment, you know. So instead of making treatment, they're making bombs and guns. So when I look around, I see that, you know, I try to find myself affiliated with people and organizations that are really trying to do something good for humanity, you know. go to the hospital, they don't have nothing. But then I found out about Canada Kids, and it gave me, you know, I had a lot of hope. You know, maybe I wish that I would have found them earlier, which I didn't get the, you know, sometimes the research, you never know. So now I have to promote this research to let everybody know, because it's not fair that people must be looking for, you know, you're looking for treatment and you can't find it. It's like a needle in a haystack. So we're tired of needles in haystack, you know?
Yeah. So Canna Kids is focused on cannabis as a medical treatment. Is it focused on cancer specifically, or?
Well, this one is directly cancer, brain. It's brain cancer, you know. So I'm even thinking that Canna Kids also, you know, it was formed by personal reasons also, you know.
Right.
So right now there's a real fight out here for really saving people, children. The children are young, you know, they can't speak for themselves. Give us all the options. Let us make our choice. We want to use the cannabis or use other drugs that give you side effects that will kill you. You know, nature is the best way. That's all I know. And cannabis is leading towards nature. Herb is natural, and it's the healing of the nation, you know.
So, Julian, is there anything else you'd like to impart to our listeners today?
Well, I just want to let the listeners know that we're, you know, the new album, As I Am, check it out. New video, Cooling in Jamaica. Also, Broken Sail, song that you check out. And, you know, we just want to let the people know that we're coming. And there's a lot of love for everyone, you know, love and respect.
Well, Julian, thank you so much for speaking with me.
Oh, thank you very much, also.
For KBOO Evening News, I'm Althea Billings.
And now we go to Insight Daily.
Insight Daily Radio.
From food to fashion, science to tech talk, or for just plain fun, we've got you covered. From the art of all things, here's Lasana Jeffries.
Eye disorders may have influenced the work of famous painters. There is a long history of scientists and clinicians arguing particular artists were affected by vision disorders based on signs in their works. Some argued the leaders of the Impressionist movement were short-sighted, and that may explain their broad, impetuous style. So, is a particular style the result of impoverished vision, or rather a conscious artistic choice made by the artist? Here are three artists who, it's been claimed, suffered vision impairments. El Greco, painter of the Spanish Renaissance, was said to have had an astigmatism which mainly causes blurry vision rather than a change in image size. Plus, other evidence suggests El Greco's use of vertical elongation was a deliberate artistic choice. Claude Monet was diagnosed with cataracts in 1912 and recommended to undergo surgery. He refused at first. One of Monet's fears was that surgery would alter his color perception, and indeed, after surgery, he complained of the world appearing too yellow or too blue. It was 2 years before he felt his color vision had returned to normal. Experimental work has confirmed color perception is measurably altered for months after cataract surgery, as the eye and brain adapt to the increased blue light previously blocked by the cataract. Clifton Pugh. His abnormal color vision is well documented, but an analysis of the colors used in Pugh's paintings failed to reveal any signatures that would suggest a color vision deficiency. This is consistent with previous work, demonstrating it was not possible to reliably diagnose a color vision deficiency based on an artist's work. Thanks for listening. I'm Lisanna Jeffries.
Insight Daily Radio.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, August 23rd, 2019. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Imara Moore. The producer is also Imara Moore, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. The director of the Evening News and Public Affairs is Althea Billings. A big thank you goes out to Imara Moore. Today was her last day as our intern. Thank you for everything, Imara. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, on K282BH Philomath, on 104.3 FM and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Linda Olson Osterlund.
And I'm Jezaniah Hawthorne. Up next is Counterspin.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Community Advisory Board will meet Tuesday, August 27th at 6 p.m.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, the Trump administration planned massive ICE workplace raids for the first day of school that included no plans for children coming home to empty houses. They tried to find a way to block undocumented kids from going to public schools.